On July 14th, 2013, we're going to be back at EXP Bar doing our Space Hazards in 3D show. And we're going to be joined by a couple of really excellent special guests. Opening up for us is going to be Sneaky Dragon featuring Ian Boothby, who we saw on our
Sneaky Dragon.
We do. Mm-hmm. He was on our follow-up 6 episode. And as I love to point out, the man is the head writer of both The Simpsons and Futurama comics. He kind of knows comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of knows what he's talking about. And we're also going to be presenting a very special live one-minute medical school with Dr. Rob, who will also be our guest on the episode that we're doing. And our topic will be, instead of a follow-ups live episode, we're doing a Space Hazards episode. We're going to talk about all the horrible, terrible, dangerous things up there for humanity out in space.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And how will people come to this show?
You can buy tickets at costigear.com. I've installed a ticketing plugin so that it will actually give you a printable ticket now.
Mm-hmm.
And we can check that at the door and handle
tickets
things a little more professionally.
$500.
I will give it to you for 1/50th of that price.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you're a soda jerk, just go to costigear.com. $10 get you in. And
upon hours of comedy gold.
It is. We're going to be there for probably 4 or 5 hours and just entertain the heck out of people.
At the very least, comedy bronze.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, the universe as we know it has been in existence for 170,000 million billion years and will be ending in a little over 10 minutes' time. So, welcome one and all to Milliways, the restaurant at the end of the universe.
How many big crunches do I have to do to get big ripped? I'm Torrin Atkinson.
The question isn't, are we doomed? It's just, how are we doomed? I'm Joe Foljam.
Always bet on black holes. I'm Fraser Cain.
I'm Kevin Leeson, and I'm confused. Today on Caustic Soda.
Bam! Welcome to Caustic Soda, Fraser Cain from Universe Today and Astronomy Cast.
Yahoo!
Hello, guys, again.
How's everything with you?
It's been going really well. It's been kind of crazy, actually. I think since we last talked, we've been doing virtual star parties. We've been featured by Google. The website's going great. Yeah, it's been really crazy.
And it's a virtual star party.
Well, what we do every Sunday night, we hook up a bunch of telescopes into a live Google Plus Hangout and reveal the night sky to you. So whatever's up, the moon, the planets, the sun, deep sky objects, and we bring in a bunch of PhD astrophysicists and explain what we're looking at and just go from object to object. We take requests. It's, I don't know, it's kind of like a live DJ night, but for astronomy.
Sounds nerdy. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's super nerdy. Yeah, I know. It has been described as about the nerdiest thing that I have ever seen, as I believe someone said nice. To us. But I love it, what they followed up with. So,
Fraser was our resident expert on our sun episode.
No, wrong.
Asteroids.
Near Earth objects.
Ah, yeah. I had my two smarty pants mixed up.
You did.
Brainiac 1 and Brainiac 2.
Yeah, I would probably direct you towards Dr. Ian O'Neill.
Yeah, that's who our actual guest was on the Sun episode.
Yeah,
Kevin had his dummy pants on.
Mm-hmm.
Dummy pants.
That's why we bring in the smarty pants.
I would say take those off, but please don't.
We're talking about the death of the universe today.
The end of all things. Of everything.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
And
it starts with a guy with an infinity gauntlet. I know that much.
Yes.
Right? And then where does it go from there?
I thought it was a reality bomb.
Is it an end on infinite Earths? No.
Yeah, or a guy in a white double-breasted pantsuit with a permy mullet. That guy shows up one day.
The Beyonder?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The word universe comes from Latin universum, which means literally turned into one from unus or one, and versus the past participle of vertere, to turn.
Okay,
turned into one. Universum.
I don't even get.
I don't know how that becomes the,
I'm not sure
what
either.
It means. But
everything that is
turned into one
thing.
The description comes from NASA's Universe 101.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Our intern Melee brought this to our attention.
I prefer the pronunciation melee, actually, melee, now that I think about
it's
it.
Because you like it in fights. Cosmologists envision two possible fates for the universe. Endless expansion, also known as the Big Chill.
Or my waistline.
Yep. And the Big Crunch. The evolution of the universe is determined by a struggle between the momentum of expansion and the pull or push of gravity. The current rate of expansion is measured by the Hubble constant, while the strength of gravity depends on the density and pressure of the matter in the universe. If the pressure of the matter is low, as is the case with most forms of matter we know of, then the fate of the universe is governed by the density. If the density of the universe is less than the critical density, then the universe will expand forever.
There's just not enough gravity to pull it back together.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gravity might slow the expansion rate down over time, but for densities below the critical density, there isn't enough gravitational pull from the material to ever stop or reverse the outward expansion. This is also known as the Big Chill or Big Freeze, because the universe will slowly cool as it expands until eventually it is unable to sustain life.
Oh, so the Big Freeze, it gets...
Yeah.
Is that it? They only provided two possible endings to the universe?
Well, we can talk about more.
Yeah, there's more.
We can and we will.
Mm.
And in fact, the Big Chill gets even freakier, so...
But if the density of the universe is greater than the critical density, then gravity will eventually win and the universe will collapse back on itself, the so-called Big Crunch. In this universe, there is sufficient mass in the universe to slow the expansion to a stop and then eventually reverse it. So what is the critical density? What is the critical density?
I have no idea.
Do you have any idea, Fraser?
Not off the top of my head.
The critical density is estimated to be approximately 5 atoms per cubic meter.
Okay.
Whereas the average density of ordinary matter in the universe is believed to be 0.2 atoms per cubic meter.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So what does that mean, Kevin?
I have no idea.
It means the universe needs to put on weight.
All I know is you said Big Crunch, and I started thinking about KFC.
The universe needs to put on weight in order for it to not expand forever.
Right. Of course, the alternative, if it puts on weight, then it'll just turn into a Big Crunch. Either way,
which
doomed.
Which one do we prefer?
Lesser of two, far, far in the future.
Fire or ice. You choose.
Fire or ice, yeah.
One of them means infinite number of KFC sandwiches, though, right? The tasty Big Crunch.
The Big Crunch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sort of.
Yeah?
Because the thought is that as the universe goes into a Big Crunch, the density of the energy gets tighter and tighter, the more KFC sandwiches you can make per second.
Right. Yeah.
Possibly leading to almost infinite number of KFC sandwiches per minute.
And now that we realize Big Crunch is the term for a possible end of all things, it's a pretty macabre name for a chicken sandwich.
Why does it make me want to eat one right now?
I'm going to eat this and forget that we're all
doing it. Isn't there like a Big Chill out there too?
Is that, the really Big Chill. It's like a Slurpee or whatever. Slurpee.
That's right. That needs to be the combo, the end of the universe combo.
The Big Crunch and the Big Chill.
And a Big Crunch.
Yeah.
Doomsday snack.
Choose your doom.
The apocalypse.
Why not have both?
The apocalypse combo. I like
apocalypse
it.
Combo.
There's the marketing.
Yeah, totally.
Cosmologists say the universe will die either in a Big Crunch or Big Chill. At KFC, you can have both.
Yeah.
So recent observation of distant supernova have suggested that the expansion of the universe is actually accelerating or speeding up.
Dope.
Which implies the existence of a form of matter with a strong negative pressure. This strange form of matter is also sometimes referred to as dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike gravity, which works to slow the expansion down, dark energy works to speed the expansion up. If dark energy, in fact, plays a significant role in the evolution of the universe, then in all likelihood, the universe will continue to expand forever.
Because there's this dark energy that we can't...
Not only expand forever, expand at an accelerating rate.
Right.
Which is...
So expand forever faster and faster.
Faster and faster, yeah. So it's the difference of like driving your car forever and driving your car but just holding down the accelerator and your car can keep accelerating forever, which is creepier, right?
Yeah, because you're going down a big hill.
It's still the same thing. In the end, it's freezing cold and there's no energy. And, you know, the universe is very large.
What happens when that expansion starts reaching our universal speed limit of the speed of light? Or will that matter because we're talking about... I'm getting all weird about the space-time expanding, and it doesn't follow that
That's what we're here for. We're here for you to get weird.
Yeah, okay. It's okay. You can get weird. No, so the universe can expand faster than the speed of light. And in fact, people think that it did. In the early universe, there's this concept of inflation where, you know, in the brief moment, right after the Big Bang, the universe expanded big, fast. And so, you know, it's possible for, because it's space. Things can't move within space faster than the speed of light,
right.
But space itself can expand.
Okay,
faster.
That's kind of what I wanted to know. I'm half smart, Kevin.
Yeah. I'm still trying to catch up to dark energy.
You're glass half full.
Just to be clear, this is all stuff just taught to me by Dr. Pamela Gay. So, you know, I'm really just reiterating what I learned in Astronomy Cast.
Right.
So what cool. Can somebody explain to me in more layman's term what this dark energy thing? Because, I mean, what is it? Is this what black holes are made of? Or
no.
So dark energy was discovered in 1998, and they were trying to answer this question, right? What is the ultimate fate of the universe? Is it going to collapse down into this singularity again? Is it going to kind of coast to a stop, or is it going to keep on, you know, expanding forever? And so they were trying to figure out, by looking at these distant supernovae, they were going to try and sort of figure out how far and how fast the universe has been expanding since these supernovae went off. And they were expecting it to be, you know, one of these choices, that either the expansion is starting to slow down, or the expansion seems to be slowing down to the point that it's going to be constant, or the expansion is slowing down to the point, but it's still going to coast forever, right? But in all cases, the answer was going to be the universe is kind of slowing down. And when they looked and found these supernovae, the answer was no. In fact, the universe is accelerating. And this was completely unexpected. None of these researchers expected this response to come out in their data.
So they all just pretended it didn't happen.
They all pretended it didn't happen, but you know, people confirmed it. And so now the sort of understanding is that this dark energy is just, you know, and nobody really knows, right, that it is this force that exists, this pressure that exists in all points in the universe that is expanding the universe and accelerating its expansion.
So this was like the scientific equivalent of dark energy, like hiding behind a door, and science came walking into the room and it jumped out and went, boo! And they all went, what the?
You know, you don't get a lot of these, you know, like with the Higgs boson, people have been chasing the Higgs boson for decades and they're like, we're pretty sure it's here. And they just got to build a big enough super colliding superconductor. But with, you know, with dark energy, it was completely unexpected. They had no plans for this. It was the exact opposite of what they were anticipating. You know, they were looking for yes, no, and they got blue.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it dark because they
can't see it. Yeah.
And
that's kind of unfortunate because then people keep connecting dark matter and dark energy together and,
right.
You know, they don't seem to have any connection.
You tell your astronomy friends from me, they need to come up with a better naming system.
Yeah, they're not very good at naming things. They we've spoken of this before. They need to get a little
black holes,
more creative.
Dark, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other one is like the, you know, vacuum pressure cause. I'm trying to think of some of the other names, but no.
They need to bring a screenwriter into the equation.
I don't want to get Star Wars on it, but if it's exerting pressure, it's kind of a force. And if you can't see it, it's dark, so it's a dark force.
It's the dark side.
Oh, snap.
This is the Emperor. The Death Star failed, so now he's just spread himself across the universe, and he's like, in billions of years, everybody's in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they should have called it Scythians or something.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, when you read that intro in the beginning, you know, before the discovery of dark energy in 1998, that was the question. Will the universe contract back down into a singularity? Will the universe coast to a nice halt? Or will the universe have enough momentum to just keep expanding forever? But now the question is, will the universe accelerate will the expansion continue at an accelerating rate? Or will the acceleration speed up to the point that the universe tears itself apart?
Oh, snap. Right?
Yeah. So now the question is not will you get the big crunch or the big freeze. The question is will you get the big freeze or the big rip?
Okay. Yeah. Well, before we go too much farther then.
Okay.
Let's do a pop quiz.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it.
Okay.
Now,
all I know is that we ended on the phrase "the big rip," which,
the big rip, where the universe tears itself apart.
Unfortunate connotations, especially with us being in such a small room.
Yes,
we'll just add that to the list of names that people need to rewrite.
Yeah.
Okay, so pop quiz. Let's start with Joe.
Okay.
What concept did Georges Lemaître come up with between 1927 and 1931?
I like the fact that his name translates to George the Master.
Oh, yes.
Right? Do you think that's a made-up name? That sounds like he gave himself that name. Not very many people are born with George the Master.
Well,
as
a lot of
name.
French people, Mario Lemieux is Mario the Best.
True.
It's those French, man.
Fucking Frenchies.
I know a guy named whose last name is Best.
There you go.
So there you go. We do it too.
Johnny Awesome.
I'm just going to guess wildly. The Big Bang?
Yes, that is exactly
right. Oh my God.
What?
Got it in one.
He came up with that TV show?
Yep, the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Belgian physicist and Roman Catholic priest proposed that the inferred recession of nebulae was due to the expansion of the universe and suggested that if you projected the expansion back in time at some finite time in the past, all the mass in the universe was concentrated into a single point, a primeval atom.
Mm. Oh.
Where and when the fabric of time and space came into existence. Although Fred Hoyle is credited with coining the term in a 1949 broadcast, radio broadcast, the Big Bang.
Right.
And it really
took
Hubble to confirm it.
Yeah, so there you go. You got an actual writer on a radio broadcast came up with a good name.
Some alliteration?
Yeah. Oh, you know I love alliteration.
That's true. All right, Kevin.
Yeah.
And we'll try this with everyone. Within one decimal point.
Oh, good.
What is the age of the universe?
I know.
In one decimal point. In like billions of years?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm going to go with... 3.2 billion.
Wow.
No, that's
you know
bad.
Better than that.
I'm pretty sure. Now, I know that there were some modifications lately, but I think I want to say 14.3 billion.
What do you say, Fraser?
I say 13.8.
Mm.
That's within one decimal point. Uh-huh. I've got between 13.77 and 13.79.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it changes every day.
I think 14.3 was a number, and then they were like, oops, we were off, or maybe I'm...
It was 13.7 with NASA's WMAP probe, then they recently did a whole new calculation of it and got it to 13.8.
Oh, right, there you go.
Zeroing in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, when I was writing Spaceship Zero, the role-playing game, and the which we'll talk about in the pop culture section, it was 12.
Ah.
So I said, well, the trend seems to be that it's going
older.
Up, so I'm just going to say 13 for safety.
Yeah.
And now I'm already a billion years off.
So when do we need to start planning for the 1.2 billion years in the future sweet 16 billion party for the universe?
Ooh.
Mm. I guess now is not the time to discuss what happened at 13.9 billion years. 13.9 billion years ago.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
I don't know if there was time then. That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, what is the Big Crunch?
We just talked about
it. The Big Crunch is when the universe reverses the Big Bang back into a singularity because it contracts in upon itself.
So what's the Big Bounce?
Ooh.
Oh, I think the Big Bounce is when it does that and then re-Big Bangs. Isn't that it? Like it crunches down and then re-explodes into a new universe?
No, it's the giantest Super Bowl ever.
Ooh, the giant Super Bowl. Fraser, what's the Big Bounce?
The Big Bounce is this concept of sort of that the universe does this big crunch, and then it's all packed up into the singularity again, and then it expands again, and then it does it again.
A cyclic model.
Yep.
Yeah, so it really depends, of course, on you having that density be low enough that the universe can keep going back and forth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which we now understand it is not. And accelerating.
Kevin, what is entropy?
That's where you're trying to urinate, but it actually sucks right back up inside your bladder.
Enter OP as opposed to exit OP?
Yeah, correct.
I like that. What do you say, Joe?
That's the Fangorn Forest Bowling Invitational Award.
The Ent Trophy?
Yeah.
God. How would you describe entropy, Fraser?
Well, entropy is the sort of movement towards disorder that the universe is constantly moving towards.
Exactly. The entropy of an isolated system never decreases because isolated systems spontaneously evolve towards thermodynamic equilibrium, which is the state of maximum entropy. Right?
All right.
Yeah.
Right, everyone?
Sure.
Well, there was a great analogy. You take a deck of cards, right, that are nicely ordered.
Okay.
And you can then sort of shuffle them a couple of times, and it starts to become more and more mixed up.
Yeah.
Now you take that deck of cards, just throw it on the ground, and just keep mixing. You'll reach a point where you can no longer mix it anymore because it's as mixed as it can possibly be.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So that's maximum entropy. Interesting. At that point, you can no longer, you know, they are as random as the cards can possibly be.
I thought you were going to say that entropy, you have your deck of cards nicely organized, and then entropy is your little brother who comes in and just smacks them out of your hand.
But that's not maximum entropy. Entropy is then you and your little brother getting down and continuing to mix those cards.
Right. An infinite number of little brothers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, or
you don't even need an infinite. I mean, there's only so much shuffling you can do.
Right. Oh. There's only so much shuffling you can do.
I think actually it's 3 or 4 full good riffle shuffles because I used to play competitive Magic the Gathering. And so they talked about what it took to get maximum or the proper amount of randomness.
The entropy tournament.
Entropy.
Yeah,
nice. Well, my brother practiced. I didn't realize he was a scientist at the time because when I was quite young, he asked me if I wanted to play 52 Pickup. To which I responded, of course, why, yes, that sounds quite entertaining. And then he threw an entire deck of cards in my face.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
And then you walked away.
Taught me about entropy.
Yeah.
Who
taught
knew?
You about entropy.
And then
didn't
you,
stick, though.
And then you taught him about, I don't have to pick this up.
Oh, no. Then he punched me and said, pick him up.
Oh, okay. So he taught you about entropy and bullying.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All in one.
So, Joe, what is eternal inflation?
That's probably what we talked about before as well, that the universe doesn't have the density to contract in on itself, so it will keep inflating and get bigger and bigger until the heat death.
Going further, the universe's expansion lasts forever in at least some regions of the universe. Because these regions expand exponentially rapidly, most of the volume of the universe at any given time, is inflating. All models of eternal inflation produce an infinite multiverse, typically a fractal. You know anything about this, Fraser?
No. Well, I mean, there's a concept of a multiverse. You know, you can have a concept of a multiverse within a single universe. And, you know, this is a whole other rabbit hole. I'm not sure you guys want to go down this. But so the concept is if the universe is infinite, and this is important, if the universe is infinite, then anything that can happen will happen an infinite number of times. So, you know, there is, if the universe is infinite, which astronomers still aren't sure if it is or not, then right now there is on another planet somewhere out in the universe, there is a bunch of guys doing a podcast right now, you know, with the same name, and it's, you know, and that's, and so that's happening. So I'm not sure if that's what they're getting at, which is that, you know, if the universe gets big enough and, you know, eventually expands, then you're going to get essentially, you know, it'll still be finite, though. So I'm not aware of that term.
Well, we actually have a news article that we'll talk about later that goes into this a little more.
Okay. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is it expands so much, but parts of it will still stay relatively close, like maybe a galaxy will be gravitationally bound,
maybe,
but all the other galaxies spread away.
Right.
And they're so far that they're effectively other universes, like that you can't get there because they're going away faster than the speed of light.
Right.
So it's impossible to reach them, so you could technically think of them as
Yeah, that makes
different
sense.
Places.
Yeah, I mean we're looking only at, you know, it's only a few trillion years away from starting to lose other galaxies in our night sky.
So Fraser, maybe now would be a good time to kind of go into detail on some of these different theories.
Sure.
Of the end of the universe.
Okay, let's hear it.
Which one would you like to start with?
Well, I guess I like the one that is the sort of right now. Well, there's the two, right? There is the big freeze, and there is the big rip.
Yeah.
And right now, the scientific evidence seems to be going down on the big freeze. So why don't we talk a bit about the big rip so people can kind of understand it?
Sure.
Right. So this is this idea. You know, you look at this concept of dark energy, where the universe is expanding, and then this pressure, something's vacuum energy is appearing in every square meter or every cubic meter of the universe and is continuing to accelerate the expansion.
Right.
And so the question is this pressure changing over time?
Mm.
So, you know, in the, you know, billions of years ago, was the pressure lower? And so then in billions of years now, as there is more space, will the pressure also increase per cubic meter? And so if the pressure will increase per cubic meter, then you have a situation that right now the pressure is only high enough to sort of push galaxy clusters away from each other. But in the far, far future, you can imagine this vacuum pressure is going to get stronger, that maybe it's going to actually be able to push galaxies away from each other. And then you can imagine the pressure gets stronger, and now galaxies themselves are starting to get, kind of the stars are getting pushed apart because of this pressure. And then eventually solar systems will get kind of torn apart. And eventually,
so then we'll just be floating on Earth, assuming Earth is still around. We'll just be floating on it with nothing else
until the pressure gets strong enough that it actually tears the Earth apart.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Is there any?
And then the pressure gets strong enough that it tears your body apart, and the pressure gets strong enough that it actually tears atoms apart.
Is there anything in the universe that doesn't happen exponentially? I'd just like something to not happen exponentially for once.
So that's this idea. That's the idea of the Big Rip. And right. So you can imagine that at some point in the far, if the amount of dark energy is increasing, that at some point in the far future, the entire universe will be torn apart at an atomic level.
Right. So that is the universe farts and it blows a hole in its proverbial pants.
It explodes. Fart is so powerful.
It just torn apart. It is, yeah, like a person farting and then just vaporizing into atomic dust.
So it's not the universe farting. It's the universe's explosive diarrhea.
Or holding in the fart until it just explodes in an atomic dust.
Got it.
Yeah, it just becomes like a spread out soup of tiny little particles that aren't forming any.
Well, no, they would all tear apart. Whatever you get, it's going to all tear apart, right? There cannot be a particle because that will get ripped apart too.
So how is this different from the Big Freeze?
Well, the Big Freeze says that instead, you're looking at the situation where the amount of dark energy remains perfectly constant. So, you know, as the universe expands, you're still just going to get the same amount of pressure in each cubic meter of space. And so instead, all you get is everything just gets to die of old age.
Okay.
Right? So the stars go out, everything gets gobbled up by black holes, the black holes evaporate, maybe all the protons decay, and the entire energy of the whole universe is, you know, just is spread out over an ever-increasing, ever-accelerating amount of volume of space.
So this is the universe just turning the lights out and padlocking the door.
Yeah.
So this is the universe closes its storage space.
Yeah, so the point is like it's not going to go out with this. You know, it's not going to get torn apart. It's just going to all get spread out.
Going out with a whimper as opposed
to
a bang.
With a whimper as opposed to a bang. A tear.
In contradiction with the better to burn out than to fade away Kurgan mantra.
And how long will this take? How long do we have to wait around for the universe
well,
to end?
The big question that we don't know is whether or not protons decay.
Right.
So
right. Okay.
So right. So that's the big question. So you're looking at, you know, on order of the stars. Okay. So our sun, for example, is going to take about maybe 5 billion years to run out of fuel, grow into a red giant, and then turn into a red dwarf.
It's right? Middle aged right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Although we've only got about another 500 million years or so until life on Earth really isn't that acceptable. So.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're actually almost most of the way through at the happy time for life on Earth.
Right.
Yeah, we've only got about 500 million years left. So, yeah, so we're looking at, 5 billion years, sorry, until the sun runs out of fuel, turns into a red giant, and then turns into a white dwarf. You're looking at maybe 12 billion years, 10 billion years until we collide with Andromeda, and so the Milky Way is no longer the Milky Way is no longer a, you know, separate spiral collection of stars.
So we're going to make like a super gallery with galaxy with Andromeda?
Yeah, we'll make one of these big elliptical galaxies, just a big ball of stars with the Milky Way. Yeah. But then, then we're looking at trillions of years for small red dwarf stars to finally use up all their fuel. They're very efficient, and so they can last a long, long time.
Right.
Right.
And then they become stellar remnants.
Right. And so in the end, right, everything is either going to, stars like our sun are going to turn into a white dwarf, and then it's going to cool down to the background temperature of the universe and become a black dwarf. While, the smaller red dwarf stars, they're just going to cool down and just cool down.
I really like, I'm glad you brought this up, Fraser. I also like that actor from Bad Santa. The little black dwarf. He's hilarious.
So you've got a situation where you've got eventually all the stars. So the universe will now be dead stars with planets, asteroids.
Oh, so we'll have planets as well in 100 trillion years?
They'll just deep freeze, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Little right. planet-sicles.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then they're all going to probably either get gobbled up by supermassive black holes. Right.
Will there just be one big black hole in the center of the universe at the end of it?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like when you put a whole bunch of spiders in a jar together. You know, okay. you end up with one big spider.
So, is it possible that like, there could be multiple black holes, but in a precise equilibrium where they have the constant amount of gravity that they never get sucked into each other? They're like there's like a triangle of black holes, and they're just going in a circle.
Well, no, I mean, you can imagine. I mean, because this dark energy is pushing apart these galaxies, then that's pushing apart these supermassive black holes. So whatever can merge will merge. Whatever can't merge is just going to get pushed away from each other.
Just fly
yeah.
apart.
Yeah. Right. So you know, if they're in gravitational interaction with each other, then they will eventually merge in some shape or form, or they're going to get into these three body motions, and they're going to get kicked out, and then they're just going to be on orbits that won't necessarily interact with anything else. So you know, you can imagine quadrillions of years in the future. You're going to have a lot of black holes and then just debris that never got caught into a black hole.
Okay.
Right. And that's going to be, remember, it's going to be accelerating. So, over these trillions of years, quadrillions of years, these supermassive black holes and their, debris are all going to be accelerated away from each other at faster and faster rates. So they're never going to interact again. And so then we know, according to Stephen Hawking, that black holes can evaporate. So you get the situation where right at the event horizon of a black hole, you get these virtual particles that form. One particle goes into the black hole and one particle goes out of the black hole. And this actually causes the black hole to decrease in mass.
Okay.
Right? And so what you're going to get is over, one with, 20 zeros, 30 zeros, these supermassive black holes are going to evaporate again.
They just evaporate.
Yeah.
They show up and then they evaporate.
That's right. Giving off like one particle at a time over, each particle will pop out every, will pop out after millions of years right?
So this is like the worst like dripping tap of all time, yeah, right? Exactly. That just like blink, blink.
Yeah. Maybe they'll be the Johnny Appleseed replanting the universe after the heat death.
True.
Giving right, except that each one of these particles, because they are they're going to be in a trajectory that will take them away from the supermassive black hole. They will also then get caught up by this accelerating expansion of the universe and be carried off forever away from each other. Right?
So if we can put like a rocket on planet Earth and we can get it away far away enough from a galaxy.
Oh, you mean like turn the planet Earth into a rocket ship?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I like the way this is starting. Right?
Then we could avoid being sucked into any black holes.
Right.
So we steer around them.
And then we'll just live happily ever after in cold, empty space.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I mean, obviously, the geological heat of the planet is going to run out and the whole planet is going to cool down to the absolute zero temperature of the background universe.
So everything's going to be near absolute zero.
Yeah. It won't be absolute zero. It'll be near absolute
zero. Hence
the
big freeze.
Yeah. So now, fast forward to the future. When we last left our heroes, the supermassive black holes. And I love how we're like rooting for the black holes. Come on, black holes.
But that far right? in the future.
That's all we got left to put our hopes and dreams on is black
that far
holes
in the future,
holding on to lose their particles. Yeah.
Well, that far in the future, the human race, I'm sure, will have perfected that hotshot technology, those little warmers that you put in your pocket. Mm-hmm. So that absolute zero, absolute zero minus the power of the ultimate hotshot.
Yeah, you'll be near absolute zero.
Yeah.
And just
stave that off with a good pair of wool underwear.
Yeah, and you can go skiing on the, on the cold, ruins of your destroyed planet.
Well, out of curiosity, if I were a human, if humanity did exist, who managed to somehow conspire to stay in existence till the end of the universe, what would they see? Like, what would they, like, on planet Earth?
Nothing.
Would it just,
just a black sky.
Black sky. No old stars.
Sky. Oh, yeah.
Here's
nothing.
The question.
No,
all the stars would have
gone out. All the galaxies would have disappeared over the cosmic event horizon. You would just see blackness.
What is the temperature rating of the spacesuits that we have right now? How cold? How cold is space right now? I guess it's not a cold. It's an absence of temperature.
Is it the same thing? No, it's cold. It's cold, cold. I mean, those spacesuits are designed to take you to, you know, minus 200 and something degrees. You know.
And then what's absolute zero? Minus
273,
I think.
Is that Kelvin?
It's minus zero Kelvin. Yes, Celsius is.
Kelvin zero, starts at absolute zero.
Right.
Kelvin,
okay.
Zero
Kelvin. Yeah. All right.
Minus 273.15 on the Celsius scale.
So we'll need to improve the spacesuits then.
A little bit.
If we want to float around.
No, I mean, they're pretty close. I mean, you know, there's not a big difference between in space in the shadows and absolute zero. I mean, it's, you know, it's cold. It's really cold. That technology won't be too hard. You know, like I said, throw some hot shots in there and you're laughing.
I'm going to start saving my tinfoil right now.
Yeah.
All right, but then there's a propagation of the species problem. There's got to be some sort of like airlock situation in your groin area. You know, you got to have so that you because your naughty bits aren't allowed to go outside on their own.
But
so.
I think in a nonillion years, will you still have
the chutzpah,
which is 10 to the 30th power?
Okay. I didn't realize that was a number.
Yeah.
I thought you were just like saying no million.
No will millions.
Will you still have everything working down there in your junk?
I don't even, In like 1,000 years, are we even going to look like humans? Because we're going to start monkeying with ourselves pretty
soon. Have
you not
done a show on this yet?
Not yet.
No, we haven't done transhumanism.
Have you done like the singularity?
We did black holes.
He's talking about the technological singularity.
Oh, okay.
No, you should totally have a conversation on that. Super fascinating. Right, so like I said, those plucky black holes attempting to resist our last best hope for the universe, attempting to resist this drip, drip, drip evaporation, and then finally the last supermassive black hole will have given up its last virtual particle. And so all that will be left is these virtual particles given off by black holes and whatever matter didn't make it into a black hole.
Floating free.
All floating right. free, yeah.
So we talked about the big rip. We talked about the big freeze. What are we missing?
Well, we're not done, though. We're not done with this part, right? So we haven't hit the end of the big freeze. So then the question is, and this is the one that's still unknown by scientists, is will protons decay? So if protons don't decay, then you will end up with these particles, you know, this debris, you know, Earth, future Earth, floating in this accelerating, ever-accelerating universe forever. Okay. Right. It'll just be frozen, and that'll be that, right? If protons do decay, then with like a 1 followed by 100 zeros in time, right, you can imagine the situation. I guess, is it Google?
No, it's 10 to 100.
10 to the power of 100, yeah. So, yeah, it's Google. You can have these, every proton in the universe will decay and turn into a sort of spray of radiation. And so now all of the matter in the universe will have just turned into radiation. And so you'll get photons, which will be hundreds of millions of light years across, that as their wavelengths are getting stretched out by this future expanding universe. That is the ultimate fate of the universe. And then just keep going, right? More expansion, more growth forever.
Growth of the universe, but not growth of anything in it.
No, because nothing, you know, there is no, that's maximum entropy. There is no difference in heat that you can draw from that point. There's no energy difference. There's just.
You spread it as thin as it can possibly go to the point where it doesn't really have any cohesiveness.
And then you spread it thinner.
So this
it's
is
like
when you're getting
butter scraped upon too big a piece of bread.
Yeah, but
to use the Hobbit reference,
and you're right at the very end of the butter pat, and you're just trying to make it go as far as you possibly can.
There's got to be something left in the Nutella jar.
So that's the big freeze?
That is the big freeze, yeah.
So what's the next big something or other? Big crunch?
The big crunch, right. So the big crunch is this idea, and now it's pretty much been turfed out thanks to dark energy. But the idea with the big crunch is actually quite exciting because, you know, you get the situation where the universe is like, you know, is like someone going up, a car going up a hill, and the car goes up the hill and it slows down to a stop and then it coasts back down.
Right.
And so you can imagine the situation where the universe, you know, is like a rubber band, right? It stretches out and the gravity's pulling on it, and then the gravity is too strong for the momentum of the expansion of the universe, and then it starts to come back inward on itself, and the universe collapses down and collapses down, and eventually, you know, it's it accelerates its contraction and it gets back down into a singularity again.
And well, it's certainly like for a total uneducated doofus like myself, that's the one that sounds like, oh,
hey. You took a year of community college.
It feels logical because you're like, well, that wouldn't that explain the Big Bang? You would have it like go down to this like single point and then explode again and then go down to the single point. And it
could where'd the first one come from?
Exactly. So wouldn't it have to be something just like this in order for the Big Bang to
even
come
to pass?
Well,
we might be the first one and there won't be a second one. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a really great lecture by Lawrence Krauss called A Universe from Nothing. And he sort of goes into this idea that, you know, that the way the universe works is actually perfect for it to have appeared and how it could have appeared.
Okay. Yeah.
And well, the gist is that if you take all of the gravity in the universe, and you take all the dark matter and the dark energy and the material and the matter, and you balance it all out, it equals zero, right? So when you take the when you take the gravity that is attracting everything together, and you sort of minus the mass and so on, and you add the dark energy, you know, you get this number which is zero. So in other words, I don't know. It's like if I owe you $5 and you owe me $5.
Right.
You know, nobody owes anybody anything, really.
I must have that transaction. I have to give him $5 and then he has to give me back the $5.
Exactly. And so you have to like go and turn in all your dark energy and turn in all your dark matter and turn in all your gravity, and it all balances out to zero. And so then you can imagine the situation where if you had a concept of infinite time, although, you know, time is sort of wrapped up with the space of the universe, you have this concept of like deep time, and we know that virtual particles appear in our universe, right?
Uh-huh.
You can imagine this situation where you just waited long enough, the entire universe's worth of particles appeared in one spot. And then it turned into the Big Bang because that's what it had to do because it was all in that same spot. And so, you know, you can imagine we would have had to have waited an almost infinite amount of time, but not an infinite amount of time.
So I think I'm getting this.
My mind is sufficiently
warm
right now.
So how much cooler is deep time than regular time?
How much cooler is deep time?
More awesome?
Are you
decide what deep time is. But yeah, I mean, you know.
You know, I don't think deep time and deep freeze are the same thing as time and just a freezer.
Right. You got to like pull the meat out and use it before it gets all freezer burned.
Yeah.
So with this cool concept with the Big Crunch, right, where you have this material coming together faster and faster and faster, there's some really neat thinking that was done, I think like back in the 60s and 70s when they didn't know any better.
Fools.
As you get faster, then now you've got too much energy. Right, you got tons of energy. Everywhere you look, it's just like everything's heating up and you got lots of energy. And so they envisioned this universe where as the matter is coming together, the amount of energy that you can extract from it just goes up and up and up and up. And so you, as a computer, just slow down your time and just run your processes faster and faster and faster. And so you experience almost like you experience an infinite amount of time because you are slowing down your process or speeding up your processes to compensate for the crunch of the universe and extract all that energy out of the universe.
Right.
Does that make sense to anyone else?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Okay.
Cool.
And that was sort of the thinking. And then,
pretty
heady
stuff.
And then, but then dark energy just sort of threw a wrench in the whole plan. Well, and so then the other idea, of course, is this idea of this steady state, that the universe expands to a point and it's got exactly the right amount of momentum to reach zero. And so then the universe expands to a certain size and then just stops. And that's
it. Okay. Is that possible? Might that happen? Or is this one debunked
as
well?
Dark energy threw a wrench at it, right? This was the question that the researchers were asking back in 1998. Will we get crunch? Will we get steady state? Or will we get, you know, endless expansion? And turns out we got something we weren't expecting.
So
a crazy universe.
Dark energy, we've been aware of it for 15 years. And so now we know everything about it, right? Like 15 years, that's more than enough time for scientists to wrap their shiznit about it.
Well,
get their stuff together.
That's the question, right? We don't know anything about it. We barely know anything.
It's just a, it's like, it's two words. It's dark energy, and it's really placeholder words. It's like, well, there's something we can't see, so we're going to call it dark, and it seems to be pushing the universe apart, so we're going to call it energy.
Yeah. It's the same thing as dark matter, too, right? You know, I mean, we don't know what dark matter is. There's some really good theories, and, you know, when we've done a couple of episodes on Astronomy Cast about this, and Pamela has a really great analogy where she says it's very much like, you're driving your car and there's this weird knocking sound that you're hearing from the car. And it only happens when you turn left, and it only happens when you've been driving for 3 hours. And so, you know, you hear this sound and you're like, oh, it's after 3 hours. And you're starting to try and triangulate on what the problem is. You take it to the shop and the mechanic goes, I don't know. I
run it for 3 hours in my shop. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't happen to me. And so you take it back out and you run some more tests. And then, you know, and so you realize bit by bit what seems to be going on. And you start to triangulate on what this thing is.
Oh, God, I hope it's not our fuel pump, because that's going to be expensive.
That's going to cost us. Right?
I hope it's not the universe's fuel pump. We're screwed.
That's going to cost. Right. And so you get the situation where you slowly narrow in on what it isn't. Right. You're fairly certain it's not your back right tire. And so you can start to figure out what it isn't, and then you get a better sense of what it is. And so people have this real knee-jerk reaction to dark matter and dark energy where they're like, I don't like it. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. But
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Welcome to the universe.
There's mountains of evidence that dark matter, for example, exists. I mean, you look out into the universe and you can see these blobs of dark matter shifting the light from more distant galaxies because of its gravity. So we know, but it's not interacting, you know, it's not blocking the light in any way. So you can see the light like moving through you look down a hot road and you can see the road ahead shifting and shimmering in the light. And that's what we see. We see these distant galaxies shifting and shimmering in the gravity of this dark matter. So it's there. It's absolutely there. But we just don't really know what it is yet. Although, you know.
Well, I have a suggestion for your next Google Hangout for Astronomy Cast.
Yeah.
Please mention this suggestion to all of your astronomer friends.
Uh-huh.
That we change the name of dark energy to crazy shit.
Crazy shit.
Well, but there's so much, though. This is a very specific type of crazy shit.
Yeah, you gotta be specific about it. Yeah, yeah.
The craziest shit.
Like, I totally understand that dark energy is like a not great term.
Uh-huh.
But because we don't know anything about it, it's the best we've got so far.
How vacuum about energy is the other name.
Vacuum energy. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I was also going to suggest like 12 question marks in a row.
Dark energy? Just question marks.
You know what the good thing about vacuum energy, though?
You can get to Google for, though.
It's true.
The good thing about vacuum energy, you can probably get it sponsored by Dyson.
One.
in the news. February 2013, Geneva, Switzerland. The discovery of a Higgs boson-like particle may imply the end of the universe in a big slurp scenario in about 10 billion years. If the particle discovered in 2012 is really the long-sought Higgs boson, the bad news is that its mass suggests the universe will end in a fast-spreading bubble of doom. Probably in tens of billions of years.
New Thicket song, Bubble of Doom.
Bubble of Doom.
Yeah, no kidding.
Joseph Lichen, a theoretical physicist at Fermilabs.
And part-time werewolf.
Yeah, he's a lycanthrope. If you use... All right, I'll do his werewolf voice then.
If you use all the physics that we know, it may be that the universe is inherently unstable. At some point, billions of years from now, it's all going to be wiped out.
Right. We've talked about this a bit, right? That the then this is a completely other way to end the universe that we didn't discuss in this show, but but that the universe could be at a certain state. Here's a way to think about it. Imagine you take like a cone, like a traffic cone, and you put a basketball at the top of that traffic cone, and you perch the ball perfectly on the top of that cone.
It's like T-ball.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That is the universe. Now, you could accidentally bump that ball down off the traffic cone. There's nowhere it would rather go than down from that point
right.
on. And then the universe would reset itself to a new state. So imagine that, but it sort of everywhere across the entire universe. So that's a possibility.
I don't think my brain is capable of imagining that.
Yeah, I know. You've been using this imagine if kind of thing, and I'm, I struggle with it. Every time you say it, I start to cringe. I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to have to imagine some more.
You have to imagine a traffic cone.
What is a traffic cone?
Well,
I don't understand.
The basketball traffic cone was the easy part to imagine. The having the basketball knocked off and then the universe resetting, that I struggle with a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah,
I gotta
yeah.
be, I gotta
yeah.
admit.
Well, that's the analogy, right? Yeah, imagine the universe resets to a lower energy state.
If you hadn't been using all these analogies,
resets to a lower gravitational state.
Trust me, Fraser, if you hadn't been using all these analogies all the way along, I would be
you
would have heard the door hit my ass on the way out.
Yeah. Would have heard a snoring sound, yeah.
The parameters for our universe, including the Higgs mass value, as well as the mass of another subatomic particle known as the top quark, which would be a great reality
show.
That's right. This nation's next top quark.
Yeah.
Suggests that we're just at the edge of stability in a metastable state.
Wait, so hipsters are involved somehow?
Yeah. The universe wants to be in a different state, so eventually to realize that, a little bubble of what you might think of as an alternate universe will appear somewhere, and it will spread out and destroy us.
Oh, like a pimple.
Yes.
So imagine you've got a whole field of these basketballs on traffic cones.
Yeah.
And you knock one over, and then they all just start to go down.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine that.
Or dominoes. Imagine dominoes.
Right. The bubble forms through an unlikely quantum fluctuation at a random time and place. So in principle, it could happen tomorrow, but then most likely in a very distant galaxy. So we are still safe for billions of years before it reaches us.
And this is one of the big fears for the Higgs boson and the Large Hadron Collider was that, you know, possibly, maybe, you know, in running the experiment, you could kick off that new state.
Oh.
Right. Yeah, so they're wandering through the field with a blindfold on and all the traffic cones and basketballs.
Yeah. Trying to find out what's out there.
Yeah, like feeling for the basketball to go, hey, I want to check this basketball out and see what it feels like and whatever. And you may.
And then you bump it.
Yeah.
Because you can't see what's going on.
Does this. Yeah, exactly. What, you know, or, you know, you are sitting in a whole field of dominoes all nicely set up.
Right.
You're like, what's this thing
and
over here?
Some scientist blunders on there with his lab coat.
But at the same
big
time,
floppy science shoes.
Well, we all know that scientists never make mistakes.
But the thing that's really important to think about is the universe is performing these experiments all the time. The universe is running, you know, particle collisions at scales that we can barely comprehend and cannot replicate in the lab. So anything that would have happened in the Large Hadron Collider would have happened 1,000 times over out in the real universe. So don't worry about it.
But not right in my backyard.
Well, relatively speaking, the sun is doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
And we kind of need like... But if Hollywood
so what you're saying is
anything,
we have to put out the sun.
They must destroy the sun. Since the dawn of time, mankind has wished to destroy the sun.
Yeah. If Hollywood has taught me anything, it's that, you know, human error is necessary for all great adventures to begin.
Yes.
Well, that's because the story of a thing just happening is doesn't make for good movies.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, make for click, a good universe the universe either. Ended.
No. Yeah. Well, let's move on to pop culture then.
All right.
All right.
Joe, have you read the book, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe?
Yeah, I have. Several times, actually.
And how... I haven't read the book.
Oh.
But I know that it's mentioned in the first one. They go to the restaurant at the end of the universe in the first...
At the very end of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right. They arrive at the restaurant at the end of the universe, and the second book is called The Restaurant at the End of the Universe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's the deal?
It's basically a huge tourist trap at the end of time.
Right.
So that super rich people can travel in time to this five-star restaurant and watch the universe die. And they put on a floor show while that goes on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's somehow, you know, science gobbledygook synced out of time with itself. So if you go a second time, you'll be at kind of a different version of it and get a different floor show and not meet yourself.
Oh, okay. To avoid the
you know,
paradox.
Hand wave. Yeah, there's no paradoxes.
And there was a great handling of it in Futurama, which was the late Philip J. Fry. Did you see that episode?
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and so they move forward in time. The professor makes a forwards time machine, and
they can't go backwards.
They can't go backwards, and so they keep going forwards in time, hoping to find someone who has created a backwards time machine. And and they eventually pass the point that all life on Earth can exist, and so the Earth is sort of overheating, and then they move further and further into the future. And they're like, well, that's it. Let's just have some beer. And then the universe, there's a second big bang, and then everything runs again.
Yeah. And then they
end up killing. Well, I don't want to, actually, you know what? I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, no, it's fine. Let's spoil it.
Yeah. Spoil it. Go ahead.
Well, they end up killing themselves. They kill, they accidentally land their time machine on top of.
Right. Because
of
the second universe is 10 feet lower
right.
than the previous one.
Right. And so they end up killing this new iteration of of themselves, wrapping up the time travel paradox. But at the same time, you're kind of left with this, well, you know, they actually just murdered. The people in the show. So
it's very Wizard of Oz too.
But then take their place, and so it's almost as though nothing else has happened.
Enough. Yeah, yeah, weird.
And then Bender buries the original bodies under a bridge.
And when I saw that show, all I could think was, "Wow, somebody read the Spaceship Zero role playing game."
Yeah, because that's almost exactly what happens in Spaceship Zero, the album by The Darkest of the Hillside Thickets, and the book. The test ship creates a singularity as part of their better-than-light drive, and when it's activated, the people inside the ship experience the death of the universe around them in an instant, and they become the center of the second Big Bang. Right?
Uh-huh. Do they survive that?
We kind of hand-wave that with
technology.
Technology.
Yeah. That's what it's for some reason, accidentally.
They basically have like an entropy-canceling device called the Bendall Field, which protects them from the end of the universe.
Right. Good.
And in the Spaceship Zero mythos, according to Nassberg's theorem, the universe is cyclical, a sequence of big bangs and big crunches, with Spaceship Zero becoming what Georges Lemaître called the primeval atom.
Ah.
And that's the point at which the universe contracts and expands. So now all they have to do is wait 13 billion years for Earth to basically re-evolve.
So in every game that you run, you have to have at least one character named Adam, the primeval Adam, right?
Yes, that's right. It's a good idea, actually.
Adam and Eve?
Yeah. And what about Doctor Who? There must be some Doctor Who end of universe episodes.
There's a couple, yeah.
There's a couple?
There's a couple.
More than one end of the universe?
There was an end of the Earth episode.
There's the end of the Earth one, but I didn't want to go to that because it doesn't deal with the end of the universe. In the Tom Baker series, actually it's Tom Baker's last story. It's called Logopolis. And he goes, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's a show where they tend to waste a lot of time.
But Logopolis was sponsored by Lego?
Logopolis.
Oh.
So it was sponsored by graphic designers.
That's a city made from log cabins.
Wait, Logopolis. Yes. Well, maybe at the end of the universe, it was supposed to be Logopolis. And it just got mispronounced.
The end.
Anyway, on Logopolis, the mathematicians there perform block transfer calculations by chant-like verbal communication, and the doctor gives the lead mathematician, known as the monitor, the new dimensions for the TARDIS. Unfortunately, the Master, who is one of the Doctor's main villains,
the arch nemesis,
he's kind of his arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. He's an evil Time Lord. He uses a device to silence the Logopolitans, and when that happens, the monitor reveals that their calculations were actually used to model charged vacuum and Boitments, CVEs, as a means of excising off excess entropy from this universe into others to stave off the imminent heat death of the universe.
Oh.
But we're also ending other universes in the meantime?
Well, maybe. Unimportant ones. They don't go into detail.
Okay, yeah. Ones that don't include us, so who the hell cares?
Without those calculations, the CVEs have disappeared, and the universe begins to fall to an entropy field, okay, which is kind of a story explanation of, we're going to make entropy happen really fast, mm-hmm, because this isn't happening. And while he is eventually successful in thwarting the Master and stopping the silence from happening, they have to do some other stuff to save the universe. And while that happens, unlike a lot of shows where, we did this and the entire universe is saved, mm-hmm, billions of people die as planets and galaxies succumb to this entropy field making its way across the universe. So there's no truly happy ending. And then at the very end of this, doing a thing to save the universe, the Doctor falls to his death and ends up regenerating into the fifth Doctor, played by Peter Davison.
So that was a Tom Baker to Peter Davison?
That was the last Tom Baker? It was.
Until he showed up
He was in the five Doctors.
Yeah, the five Doctors.
Yeah, several.
So does this predate or post-date Crisis on Infinite Earths, that DC story from the early 80s? Yeah. Oh, those thieves.
Yeah.
Those freaking story thieves over there at DC Comics, because this sounds real familiar.
Yeah, it's a good episode. It's got a little, like I said, it's got a little bit of, come on, can you get on track, tighten it up a bit? But
it's like every other Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah.
Well, especially those older Doctor Who episodes, they were made serially. So this was actually a four-part serial. And so every time they do the second episode of it, they have to kind of go over what happened before.
Got to sum up everything. Yeah.
Yeah. The very first part of it is usually basically a repetition and sometimes a refilming for some reason of the very end of the previous episode. So you get the cliffhanger repeated at the beginning of it so that they can continue it. I love the old Doctor Who's, but they do have these problems. You have to admit them. But I really enjoyed it. It was fun to rewatch. I haven't watched it in ages. And just reminded me of how much I love Tom Baker as Doctor Who. He's my doctor. He was my first. And
did he examine you?
No, not that kind of doctor.
You know, Joe, you didn't have to turn your head and cough.
The other episode involving the entire end of the universe in Doctor Who is a recent one. It's from the fourth series of the kind of reboot or reimagining. It's not even, it's continues, whatever you want to call it. And in it, it's a two-parter, the end of the fourth season, The Stolen Earth and Journey's End. And in it, the Daleks, led by Davros, they, for some hand-wavy ability, teleport the Earth to this out-of-sync-with-the-universe pocket universe and put them in this 27-planet configuration that is going to be used to arm a thing called a reality bomb, which will destroy everything in the universe except the things that are very close to where the bomb is, which is all the Daleks. Uh-huh. And the Daleks hate all other life. Right. So to them, this is like, excellent, we will destroy everything but us, and then in the new universe, it will be just us.
So is the Earth going to be destroyed as part of that bomb?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you'd asked me before you gave me that explanation what I thought a reality bomb was, I thought it'd be telling somebody an uncomfortable truth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just dropped a reality bomb on Joe. You know what? Your personality? Not that good. That's a reality bomb. Yeah. Yeah, and then you end it with the kaboom right there in your face.
Well, there was a Star Trek Next Generation episode called Where No One Has Gone Before.
Oh?
This is the one with the Traveler. Fraser, have you seen this one?
Wasn't that in the Next Generation. Sorry? Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Who, like, whisks alien Wesley Crusher off to some distant corner of the universe?
Yeah.
Well, in the entire ship. The Traveler was an alien who had the ability to alter space, time, and warp fields with the power of his mind.
Okay.
The power of story hand waving.
Yeah. And for some reason, he became an assistant to Starfleet propulsion expert Kosinski, who claimed to have discovered a revolutionary new method of warp drive. But all of Kosinski's formulas were just bogus, and it was the Traveler using his mental powers.
Yeah.
Okay. So just kind of like a gag, like, oh, I'm going to make this guy think that he's a new type of warp power.
I don't know if he's using this just so he can find Wesley Crusher or whatever, because right. Wesley Crusher turns out to be, eventually at the end of the series, he kind of becomes the Traveler's protege.
Ugh, so what he's a like terrible decision that
he's
was.
He becomes like the Silver Surfer to...
yeah, he's the know. Herald of the Traveler.
Yeah. or maybe the cabin boy to the Traveler, as the case may be.
Yeah, they describe him as being like one of those geniuses that come around every few generations, like a Mozart, except he's about warp fields and science.
Is it any coincidence that, you know, back in kind of the turn of the century era, they called communist fellow travelers? So is this, a nod and a wink at communism?
Yeah, maybe.
At collective living? A man and a boy?
So in the episode, things go astray somehow, and they eventually end up at the edge of the universe. So not necessarily the end of the universe, but the edge of the universe.
Toes hanging over it?
Kind of. So what we're talking about as if the universe is constantly expanding, then this would be the far edge.
The bounding edge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And where everyone... Sorry,
Fraser, go ahead. I was going to say they also cover that in Futurama as well, right? They had an episode where they took Fry out to sort of all the stuff that you never do, and they went to the moon, and they went to the edge of the universe, and they could see the other universe.
Oh, right.
But everyone had hats. Yeah.
And in the Next Generation episode, that's where thought becomes reality.
Oh, so
at
it's
the
like,
edge of the universe.
It's kind of like a living holodeck?
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. The thoughts, imagination, memories of the crew began to manifest as subjective or shared reality.
That's what you'd expect to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because your thoughts aren't just electrical impulses in your meat brain. They're magical.
No, the Traveler explains
that. No, only when you're
thought...
near the edge of the universe does this happen.
Yeah, well. Well, the Traveler explained that thought was, in fact, the basis of all reality.
Yeah.
And the essence of the area of where they were.
Right. Yeah, so, citation needed, Traveler.
Yeah.
Back that up with science. Did you ever read, there's an Isaac Asimov book called The Last Question. Did you ever read that book? It was like 50
no, I haven't.
Years old or something. And, you know, now it's kind of trite, but the gist being they were dealing with that big crunch. And so they, you know, they created this computer to solve, like, how are we going to solve this problem as the big crunch approaches? And eventually everybody died because of the heat, and the computer went on, and then it figured it out and realized it could start a new universe up. And they said, let there be light. And starting a universe up.
Computer-generated universe.
Computer-generated universe. It was really God.
So from our listener, Holly, she mentioned the Well of Souls 5-book series by Jack Chalker. Anyone?
No, the name is familiar.
You have read them.
I have read them. They're no good.
Oh, that is a thumbs down.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Jack Chalker. I don't know why.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, in the series, Nathan Brazil, who may in fact be God, or just a freighter pilot with a good heart,
same diff,
and Mavra Change have blah 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 turn off the Markovian world computers,
okay,
and doing so effectively resets the universe, and the only races left are the ones on the existence on the Well world, which exists outside of everything in a pocket dimension, basically.
Okay.
And so the quote is, and this kind of ties up to what we were talking earlier, of what you would see.
Okay.
The great, brilliant, wondrous star field that was the night sky simply flickered, then winked out. There was only blackness where it had been, a blackness as absolute as anyone had ever seen.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Fraser called it.
Yeah. The
blackest black.
Universe. Far future.
I was thinking about, you know, I didn't think about this while we were doing the research, but I just realized Galactus from Marvel Comics.
Right.
He is the sole survivor of the previous universe.
Oh, so a big bounce theory.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Whole thing is the reason that he eats planets is to stay alive, because when this universe dies, he has to help create the next one.
Ah.
So he's a villain in that he goes around, you know, eating planets full of life.
Yeah.
But to him, he's like, look, I got to do this because you need me.
Yeah. He's like a villain in the same way that we are villains to ants.
If I don't eat every planet in this universe, there won't be a universe to start up again.
Right. Yeah, this kind of whole acceptable loss theory. This is collateral damage in Galactus's mind.
Shouldn't so Galactus be crying fire. And like apologizing? You send the Silver Surfer to apologize. You know, Galactus regrets to inform you. Yeah, he's gonna have to eat you all.
Yeah, I don't think from the previous universe he's from they have politeness. No. He's just
so sorry.
He's brash.
Yeah.
So is he just like a cosmic composter? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I guess so, kind of. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what his job is, but that's his explanation for why he must survive. And I think
he's pulling our leg.
I think at one point, didn't the Fantastic Four pull some kind of stuff to defeat him, and he was dying, and then he told Reed Richards this whole thing, and was like, oh, shit.
If you destroy me, the universe will go kaput.
Yeah, I'm sure Reed Richards was like, we better save his life. Yeah, I know. Ah, damn it.
Next time I get stabbed in the street or whatever, or the first time I get stabbed in the street, I'm going to say, no, you can't kill me. The universe will explode. See how that works.
You ever think that once he eats a planet, he shits an asteroid belt?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yes, he does.
Is there anything new with Astronomy Cast or Universe Today that we should know about, Fraser?
We crossed our... Well, yeah. So I'm doing a series of explainer videos on YouTube, which are pretty fun. So I've covered...
Yeah, I've been seeing those.
Yeah. So we've done a bunch of topics with my buddy Jason Harmer. We've been sort of picking a bunch of small topics like how fast does the Earth rotate? How long does it take to get to Mars? What's the biggest star in the universe? You know, and where are all the aliens? We've got a bunch more we're going to work on shortly. And so we're trying to put out two of these a week. And so if you go to my YouTube channel, just do a search for Universe Today on YouTube. They're about 4 minutes long and they're kind of silly and sort of quick and explain some topic in space and astronomy. And then also every Sunday night we do these virtual star parties. We hook up telescopes with Astronomy Cast. We just crossed episode 300 of Astronomy Cast. Mm. So nobody ever says, you know, I wish you had more shows. Now they're busy for years now listening to us. And then Universe Today, we've got a ton of great writers. We've got, you know, the site is really booming now. We've probably got 10, 15 writers that are supplying articles. So it's great. I think we're the best space news site on the web now.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
And we'll put up all the relevant links on causticsodapodcast.com for those who aren't able to remember what we've said. Just go to causticsodapodcast.com and follow the links.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks,
Fraser.
Thanks for
coming. And I want to talk about aliens. So do I, can we have a trilogy?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, we'll have I'm sure we'll have a Hitchhiker's Guide like trilogy where it ends up being more than three.
That sounds awesome.
It's such a weird feeling to know you're alive. It's such an awful feeling. You're dying inside, and when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy today. It's such a bad feeling, an ominous feeling, a feeling you know that we'll be back when the week is new, and we'll have more gross facts for you, and you'll have things you want to hear about. We will too.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson while being bombarded with cosmic rays. To comment on episodes, make donations, and for links, images, videos, and show notes, visit causticsodapodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook, tweet us on Twitter at Caustic Podcast, email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Fraser Kane.
Fraser, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, brilliant.
All right.
But I have both, we can put these up in the posts. I found a galaxy collision video. Somebody has modeled the Milky Way versus Andromeda here.
Who will win?
It's Milky Andromeda. Neither.
Neither
well,
wins.
It's bigger.
It's not here.
Is that true? Andromeda's bigger? The
yes.
Milky Way?
Yes, Andromeda's bigger.
So there's the first hit.
Oh, there's Earth right there.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Flung into space. Wait, deep, dark space.
Watch this. This is cool, though. Like, it's kind of... They get messed up, and then they form these new two new spirals, but they're so close that...
That looks like Admiral Akbar's face.
A little.
And here they come here they for come another again. Run. This is like getting back together with an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a terrible mistake, but you can't help yourself. Yeah,
an rebound. Inevitable but huge
the
mistake.
The big rebound.
Yeah.
The big
we
rebound.
We call that.
And here we go. Here comes Milk-dromata.
Milk-dromata. I like it.
Well, there's a bit of a battle going on. People want to call it Milk-o-media, and I really don't like that name, so I just keep pushing Milk-dromata.
I like Milk-dromata better.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure by the time this happens, we won't even be flapping our meat lips and making
still,
sounds with our larynx to describe things. So.
Still, the name has to be, you know, remembered through history.
Well, right. We are definitely going to post this video on the website, causticsodapodcast.com, so everyone can come out and check the big rebound.
Well, there's a Milky Way candy bar.
Just remember
bar.
To call it Andromeda. That's all I'm asking.
How come there's not a Andromeda chocolate bar?
That's a good question.
Have you guys done a show on the Fermi Paradox yet?
I don't even know what that is.
That's the, you know, where are all the aliens?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking about doing
and the answers to the Fermi
episode.
Paradox, like the Great Filter, that something happens to every single intelligent species to kill it off.
Which is?
We don't know. But it's about to happen.
We don't know
to
it is. Otherwise, it's going to happen to us. We just don't
right.
know.
But we're next.
What exactly is going to happen?
What is it? Who knows? But
I'll tell you what it is.
Imminent.
3D printing of nuclear weapons.
Right.
That's what it is. As soon as you can 3D print nuclear weapons, doomed.
That we're is over. A legitimate theory for it.
Yep. Because it's going to happen. We're at the point we can 3D print guns now, and they're talking about 3D printing circuit boards.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, 500 years from now, maybe, you can start 3D printing
but can
on the atomic level.
Well, or 3D printing viruses.
Can you 3D print plutonium?
No.
That's the thing.
Not right now.
No, but you could absolutely DNA print a virus.
In the year 2525.
Right? Yeah, and then you'll be 3D printing antivirals, and it'll just
Nanobots.
Become a huge...
You could also 3D print a gray goo.
Yeah.
No.
But by that point
I'm just
time,
happy with the sex bots. I would just stop there.
As long as they're sex bots
why keep
before
going.
I get turned into gray goo.
The other. You can't have sex bots without an apocalypse.
Wow, damn it.
Girl.
This is outrageous.
This is a catch 22.
No, it's a catch 69.
Yeah.